Welcome to Rejected Religion Spotlight. My guest this evening is Richard Mason, who has joined me to share his research into Arthur Edward Waite. Richard is in the process of finalizing his master's degree in Western esotericism from the history of Hermetic philosophy and related currents at the University of Amsterdam. And he also holds a BA from Swansea University and a postgraduate diploma in modern history from St. Andrews University. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you very much.
Glad to have you here after some delays in trying to get this set up. But it's finally happening, and I'm very, very happy for it because I'm very interested to talk to you this evening. And I actually had the pleasure of learning about your research at the Esogen Symposium that took place in April of this year and thought it would be an excellent topic for Spotlight. Your presentation title then in April was Houses of the Holy, A.E. Waite and His Notion of a Secret Tradition. And this was a lightning round presentation of like 6 minutes or something to that extent. That's so, fine. So there's definitely more that can be said about this, this whole subject. And I'm happy to give you the opportunity tonight to be able to do that. Most people who come across the name of Arthur Edward Waite think immediately of the Rider Waite tarot deck, but there is much more to be discovered about Waite and his work, and that's what we're going to be discussing this evening. So, but before we get into all of the details, I'd like to start our discussion, if you'd be so kind, with a general background and bio on Arthur Edward Waite. Sorry, I'm getting a little tongue-tied. So.
No, that's quite all right, quite all right. I think that Arthur Edward Waite, he's a figure that is certainly deserving of more prominence than otherwise he is afforded in the contemporary era and by scholars and interested persons today. He was an American. He was born in 1857 in Brooklyn, New York, and he died in Kent in the United Kingdom in 1943. He was someone who was torn between, on the one hand, his American parentage and American English, which he left, I think, at the age of maybe two or three. The details weren't entirely well known until Marcus Katz confirmed that his parents had indeed married. He wasn't illegitimate, yet Bob Gilbert, his biographer, has stated that he certainly felt himself that he was born of illegitimacy. And the 19th century, of course, being a time when illegitimacy was afforded quite a lot of social condemnation. It was seen as a, you were an outcast almost, and you were seen as not properly, you weren't fully in the sense of being legitimate or having a full status. And they were very much discriminated against and had social and legal repercussions for their status, which I think is one of the reasons why I was drawn to Arthur Edward Waite in the first place, because he was very much an outsider, even in esoteric or occult circles. He didn't have a degree. He didn't have a great wealth like Blavatsky or a prominent parentage. He was someone that very much lived by his own writing, and he was constantly having publishers that published what he was writing to an interested public. He at one time had his own magazine or journal titled The Unknown World in 1894 and 1895, and he seemed to have participated more actively than almost any other figure that I could really find. He was someone that was incredibly active, both in French with Papus and his Martinist order in the turn of the century. He was incredibly active within Annabonus Kingsford's Hermetic Society, which splintered off from the Theosophical Society in 1886, I want to say. And I was drawn to him because of that. He had this kind of, you know, I suppose, outsider's perception. He had a sort of background that wasn't yet refined or established or known in the way that someone like Aleister Crowley, for instance, is being referenced in popular culture and music videos and so forth for quite some time in the 70s and 80s. But Arthur Edward Waite, despite his great literary output, is not so well known. So I was drawn to him for that reason.
Well, that's one, I guess, a very good thing that's helping more and more people to know about Waite's background and what he accomplished in his lifetime. He was actually quite a prolific author, if I'm not mistaken. And so, yeah, he has a lot to offer. So that's great that you're doing this research.
Thank you.
Really good work that you're doing. So, but in your presentation, I recall that you mentioned a person by the name of John Chester Greville as someone who was very important to Waite. And so if you could talk a little bit more about who this man was and how does he relate to the later works that Waite produced?
Yes. I mean, I think with Reverend Chester Greville, John Chester Greville.
Oh, Greville, I'm sorry.
Yes, he was the genesis, I think, for Waite's abiding interest in Egypt. This was someone who was a local clergyman, a traveling Anglican parishioner, member of the church, clergy, and yet at the same time, he was constantly out searching for artifacts, for archaeological digs with people like Francis Burton, with Speke as well, going into Egypt in the 1860s, 1870s, and staying with many of these people. I think there was a reference, a source that I've come across when I was presenting, writing my thesis, that there was a trip that he actually accompanied Sir Francis Burton and wintered with him for a whole year during the winter in Egypt at that time. So he was there for quite some time. And he was acquiring elements or certain discoveries, which he then donated to the British Museum. And he came across Waite because Waite, or Arthur Edward Waite, was for the most part an orphan. Unfortunately, I think his mother was very alcoholic and very undesirable for him to be around her for many length of time. And he was taken up by this affable clergyman in order to prompt his coming of age. I think he was someone that was intrinsic to the development of his later career, his interest in Freemasonry, his interest in learned establishments, his application, in fact, to Oxford University. Bob Gilbert was kind enough to show me source material, which suggests that he did indeed encourage the young Waite to apply to Oxford University. But unfortunately, it never came about because he was pauper. He was impoverished, no means of paying for himself. He hadn't qualified for a scholarship. But he was accepted, but unfortunately had to defer. So this is why I think this Chester Greville, who, as far as I can see, yes, he's discussed somewhat by Bob Gilbert, but on the other hand, not as well known compared to what I've been able to prove in terms of his later career and his focus and interest in Freemasonry, and above all, Egypt, which became the center point for the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn.
Right. So, fulfilling this surrogate father role, as it were, yes. What was his particular interest in Egypt? If he's a clergyman and he's not so involved in quote unquote occult societies, and so,
yeah.
What was the attraction to Egypt?
I mean, and again, I think that the attraction to Egypt, certainly during the 19th century, which was opened up by Napoleon and had catered to a number of Europeans entering into that part of the world from really 1820s, 1830s onwards. Especially clergymen and members of the church, they were interested, I think, because much the same way that you have people like John Smith with his Assyrian, what was it, the Epic of Gilgamesh being translated and becoming widely known amongst the learned classes of Europe. This was a territory which, over the time of Waite's lifetime, certainly, had fallen within the British sphere of influence. Egypt was a territory within the British Empire. It was something which many people were attracted to because of its great antiquity.
Right.
And this traveling clergyman was particularly curious, as I said, in archaeological digs. I mean, he lived too early to have seen Tutankhamun's tomb with Harold Carter in the 1920s and 30s. But he was certainly one of the kind of prototypes, I think, for the adventurer, the scholar who goes into ancient places really for the first time to bring up these things. I can point to Belzoni as another figure, but he was earlier still. And I think that that's why he was particularly interested in Egypt, is because there was a general trend amongst that time in the 1860s, 1870s, and 1880s, where that territory became more interesting and attractive to clergymen, members of the church, and intellectuals because of the awareness of how old these places were.
Understood. Thank you for explaining that. That puts it into a larger context as well. So that's always good to have. But I was wondering if there were other people as well who influenced Waite's interest in esotericism, or more specifically, the occult, quote unquote.
Yeah. I mean, this this figure, Greville Chester, he took Waite on a trip to Paris either in 1873 or 1874. In Waite's life, he was not the only child. His parents had two children, one of whom was Frederica Waite, who I think was born in 1859 and died in 1874. And her death was a very difficult time for Arthur, who reacted very quickly towards it and lost interest in Catholicism, became very much more reclusive than he otherwise was, and he felt, I think, very much a stranger in his world, with no immediate family there. His obviously father had passed away when he was very young at sea, and his mother was in no fit state to care for him. And his sister, who was his only close contact in life, passing away was a devastating blow for him. Now, Greville Chester, he took Waite to Paris, and like I said, I'm unable to establish what the year was, but there was an interesting episode where he was taken to Paris shortly after the Franco-Prussian War conclusion in 1874, I think, and there was an awareness of Louis Claude de Saint-Martin, Martinism. He was buying books from Eliphas Levi. He was taking an interest in nascent the Theosophical Society. He was becoming aware that there was this movement called spiritualism that had been making waves in America. And he was drawn to this. He was curious about this because he had lost an interest in Catholicism. And yet at the same time, he was still focusing on these matters which seemed to be more relevant to him, which seemed to promise, for instance, a way to communicate with his dead sister, things, and he was drawn for those reasons. So, as a candidate, I think that he was certainly fitting the quality of the kind of person that they were looking for, because not only had his father died, but his sister had died too, and he was enriched or enmeshed in literature which promised to effectively soothe those left behind and wanting to make contact somehow with those beyond the grave.
I see. And was it at this time then that he became more interested in joining various orders? Did that come around this time?
No. I mean, Waite is an interesting case because he was a fully formed, I think, 40-year-old man when he did join the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, I believe he was actually prevented from joining at an earlier stage. So he was banned from the Societas Rosicruciana in Anglia, which is William Wynne Westcott's organization that he headed from, I think, 1870 until his death. And this was a Rosicrucian order formed in England, only open to master masons. And Waite was writing on this society from 1887 when he was not a master mason. He wasn't even a mason. And they blackballed him for that reason. The order's founders, the Order of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, were both members of the Societas in Anglia, or the Rosicrucian Society in England, shall we say, rather than the Latin title. And they were members, obviously, of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. And so they did not want to have Waite, who presented himself as someone knowledgeable of these matters, but hadn't been a member, from joining the Golden Dawn. So he could have been a member at an earlier stage, but unfortunately he was blackballed from joining until 1893, which is when he was accepted to join as a member.
And you said he was 40 years old at that time?
I think if he was born in 1857, he must have been probably older than 40, but he was certainly not interested or active from a young age, in the sense of, you know, in his teens, in his 30s. He was someone that I think came to it very gradually. And certainly the period that I was interested in for Waite, his secret tradition, he only really begins making his mature thoughts known through his writings and through his rituals from 1900 onwards. And so he was, you know, quite senior in age at that time.
I see. That's very, very interesting that this all happened at a later stage in his life. And interesting also as well that the Waite is famous for his tarot deck, the Rider Waite tarot, that was illustrated by a Golden Dawn member named Pamela Coleman Smith. And it's probably the most recognized deck out there. Most people have seen it, even if they don't really make a connection that Waite was the one who had created this deck with Smith. They know of it, so it's kind of a part of our culture, I suppose you could say. Old culture, I guess you could say. So, but in terms of Waite's inspiration for this deck, I was wondering where that came from, and if this time that he spent in Paris, and if I understand correctly, he met Eliphas Levi.
Yes.
Was there any influence there in the way he thought about tarot?
Certainly. I mean, I think it was not so much Eliphas Levi, who was certainly someone of prominence, both within the Golden Dawn and more generally with his own writings. And he was certainly a big impact, or made a big impact on Waite, given that Waite then began translating Eliphas Levi's French works into English and making available them for the first time to an English audience. And this was, I think, really from the 1880s onwards, like 1886, 1887. He began taking considerable time to translate these works from French into English. But in terms of the tarot, I would say that I'm trying to remember his name now. There was a Swiss man who was at the time living with Papusse in Paris, called Oswald Wirth, I believe his name was. I say he's Swiss. I think he lived in Switzerland towards the end of his life. But Oswald Wirth lived in Paris and was associated with Papusse. And he introduced a set of tarot cards, which I think was of some inspiration to Waite. Another interesting facet, which I think is worth bearing in mind and noting here, is that the British Museum, which is where many of these occultists met, socialized, interacted with in their social circles, the British Museum's reading room, There was a set of tarot cards that derived from Italy, dating back from, I think, the 15th or 16th century. And they happened to be when Waite was active there. And I think that was what generated his interest to publish his own Rider-Waite tarot, or should I say Rider-Waite-Smith tarot. Mm. Smith is often not acknowledged for having illustrated or played an important role in that pack. And I think it's really the illustrations, the fact that all of the cards are illustrated, is what made it successful and is what really defined Waite, even if he's unknown or unrecognized in their distribution and success. It's what distinguishes them as unique.
Fascinating stuff. I really am enjoying hearing more about all of this after only being able to hear 6 minutes of your talk before many, many months ago. This is all really, really good stuff. I really like it. You also mentioned in your presentation back in April that Waite holds an outsider status, in your opinion, and that his work regarding the secret tradition or a notion of secret tradition has been neglected. So I'd like to focus on this, to start with why you consider him an outsider and then moving on to what the secret tradition is.
Sure. Well, I mean, in my opening, I characterized Waite as an outsider because unlike someone like Aleister Crowley or Charles Maitland, Blavatsky, he had no degree. He didn't have any family connections. He didn't have a family, really. Mm. He came from quite a humble origin, and yet at the same time was able to leave quite an impressive legacy, even though it remains somewhat stultified and forgotten now. In terms of the unknown aspect as well, the outsider perspective, he, as I said, was born in America, and unfortunately, despite many of his contributions and connections with Freemasonry, when he died, he didn't really pass with much fanfare. He was known within esoteric Masonic circles, groups such as that by Cyrus Field Willard, who allowed him to join the Philalethes Society, which was, I think, established in 1921 by ex-members of the Theosophical Society, but had become interested in Freemasonry over the course of the later 19th and early 20th century. They recognized him, but it wasn't really publicly notified or acknowledged. It was someone who was private or secretive and didn't have a kind of a public reputation as such. But moving to the secret tradition, and one of the reasons why I think it is deserving of more study and greater acknowledgement should be paid towards Waite, is the fact that he, unlike many of the other occultists, seemed to define esotericism as corresponding to all of these fields, whether it's alchemy, Rosicrucianism, Martinism, these somewhat disjointed, unconnected fields, for him, were all part of the same thing. They were tapping into something which he coined the secret tradition, which is very seemingly opaque. It's seemingly something which is, you know, quite straightforward, but he felt that they bore a correspondence or a connection to each other in a way which only an initiate could understand. So the Holy Grail was connected with alchemy, astrology, Kabbalah, and they all formed a kind of a tree, if you will, with many roots. And this is something which you don't really see within other authors, who often focused on one thing and only one thing, or maybe two or three, but never the entirety. And I think if you look at Waite's bibliography, which was compiled by Bob Gilbert and published, you can get a sense of the depth and breadth of his studies and the fact that he wanted to be the first to really write on these things with some authority. And I think that that's really what defined Waite and his contribution, even though, unfortunately, he suffered from writing quite difficult works that seemed to be inaccessible to outsiders who weren't already themselves initiated, or he was unable to communicate effectively in the way that someone like perhaps Aleister Crowley or later occultists were. because they were able to directly write accessible texts which didn't have the bluster of Waite's prose.
I see. And is it possible for just lay people, I suppose, that meaning in particular people who aren't a member of any occult organization, but just someone who might be interested to read these books, is it possible to have access to these materials?
Oh, yes. I mean, certainly in writing my thesis, I noticed that there were quite a lot of texts, for instance, The Secret Tradition in Freemasonry, volumes 1 and 2. So the first volume was published in 1909, the second was published in 1937. these texts often are found in PDF form. They're often accessible online or via public libraries. But on the whole, in terms of understanding it or trying to just stick with it for any length of time, it does prove quite difficult. Mm. So it's very text. He often uses 7 or 6 words where one would do. And something that Paul very much was wanting to emphasize to me upon declaring to him that I wish to pursue this as a subject of study. And I think this is something which many people, lay people, people may be interested in choosing a topic for a dissertation, are put off by. They don't find it easy to get right away, and so they put it down and they move on to something else. But for me, this was partly one of the reasons why I was drawn to him, because it is this outsider, like I was saying, perception, because he's someone that relatively, compared to others, isn't so well known. His secret tradition isn't immediately evident what it actually means. He himself is quite ambiguous, and perhaps intentionally so, as to what he understands by the term. And about a Hanegraaff in a recent article in talking about Waite's Kabbalah, discusses this as well, in the sense that his best friend, Arthur Machen, was unable to really tell his friend or share with his public audience who or what Waite actually subscribed to or believed in, whether it was Christianity, Roman Catholicism, whether it was some form of mutant paganism, or it was ambiguous as to what it was, Gnosticism. He was finding it difficult to understand exactly what his close and most intimate friend believed in or subscribed to. So he clearly kept it very private and secretive, which I think is usually what people expect with an occultist. But it's something which drew me to him as a person and why I decided upon my studies.
I see. And just as an aside, how long have you been studying these works to try to grasp the ideas that he's trying to put forth? How long have you been working on this?
I've been working on studying them, I would say now, for 5 years, maybe 4 or 5 years. And it's been something which has taken me quite some time, but it's certainly been rewarding and beneficial to me, having done this.
Excellent.
Yes. I was surprised as well that even in Masonic circles, I recently went to London to attend the Freemason School. Even there, he's relatively unknown in terms of a figure, in terms of what he's contributed, given that he was a translator of Eliphas Levi and one of the creators of the Rider-Waite Tarot. He remains, unfortunately, somewhat obscure, even in the societies that he would probably, what you would expect, to be more better known.
Which makes your work even more important in that in that regard.
I would like to think so.
If you can share, you've been sharing a little bit already about your insights about that you found with regards to your research. If you could share a little bit more about what you think this deeper understanding that you have of Waite's work now, what this contributes to the wider field of esotericism.
Okay. Well, it's something which I think is a tentative area to discuss. I need to give proper commendation as well to Stuart Sudikin, who was a leading scholar in weight studies, who was focused specifically upon the tarot. And this is something that I was unfamiliar with. I was studying the full length of his Sikh tradition, looking at alchemy, Rosicrucianism, Martinism, Freemasonry, of course. But he focused very heavily on tarot. And he was of the opinion, and I'm inclined to subscribe with him to this view, that Waite was an incredibly literary person, and he used his fictional works to disguise ritualistic epics, to disguise events that actually happened, Romanov clefs with figures and characters and personalities actually existed, but done so in a style which was not immediately evident to someone who had just stumbled across it. There was a very, very latent interest for Waite upon a woman who he unfortunately didn't have the success in marrying, but instead married his sister. And this seems to be something which is cardinal to what I see behind the secret tradition. This is the idea of holy matrimony, the idea of sexual magic even. This is something which I think is really the inner secret of Waite's secret tradition. The fact that he has a name for his wife, Lucasta, deriving from a 17th century play, I think that that's quite telling and suggestive of what Waite truly meant by the term secret tradition. And that's what I've intended to share with you today about that.
Well, thank you for that. I was wondering if when you're finished with your thesis, if that will be made available for people to read.
Yes. Yes, it will.
Great. And is there a particular place right now that you already know that you'll be making it available?
Yes. Yes. I have someone in mind, and I would need to, as I was saying before, speaking over you, sorry, but I'll have to have words with my supervisors, Wouter Hanegraaff and Margaret Passy, but I would like to make it available to interested persons should they wish to have a copy, and hopefully have it published at some point.
So, wonderful. You. That is wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing your insights and the products of your research with me this evening. You'll be talking about this other tarot, the topic of the tarot. I did not know this until you told me, but Waite has another tarot deck. You'll be talking about this at the European Society for the Study of Western Esotericism's SWAY 8 conference at University College Cork in Ireland next year. So this, to me, just sounds, I mean, I can't wait to hear more about this, but maybe after all of that's over, you might want to join me again, come back and talk about that. Cool. I would love that if we could work that out. In the meantime, though, people who might have questions are most welcome to post them here below in the comment section. And I was just wondering if anyone wanted to contact you, is there an email address that I can list in the information, in the references, that people can contact you with questions if they would like to discuss things in more detail with you, or would you just prefer to do that in the comment section?
No, I mean, I have an email address. My email address is rwgm, that's my initials, Richard William Gerald Mason, @outlook.com. I haven't made my own personal email yet, but that's something that I'm working on. That's an email I've had since, I don't know, I think I was 12 or 13, 14 when I made it. And because it's my initials, I felt that that was still, you know, professional and happy to use for that purpose.
Okay.
If anyone does have questions, they can contact me there.
Wonderful. Thank you for providing that. I will make sure to list that. Are you on social media at all? Do you do that?
I rarely go on nowadays. I would probably say I'm most available through attending the events. I was fortunate enough to have attended my first S-Way in 2019 before the pandemic. I listened to a host of capable scholars. I didn't participate myself because I didn't feel confident at that time to do so. But I wanted to learn the lay of the land and see how other people did it first. Mm. And I did. I'm looking forward, as you say, to participate in next year's S-Way in Cork, Ireland, delivering my paper on the second Rider-Waite Tarrant. So that's what I'm going to be looking for. I say Rider-Waite, I mean just Waite's Tarrant. This Waite's, is the Cynic Pippet deck, to give its appropriate name.
Could you say that again? Your the audio fell away.
Sorry, it was the Trinic Pippet deck.
Trinic Pippet.
And this was the second tarot that Waite was involved in and was solely intentionally used for the purposes of his secret society, the Fellowship of the Rosy Cross.
Interesting stuff. Congratulations for being selected to present at S-Way. And I wish you the best in all of your future endeavors. And I hope to see you in Ireland next year. I hope everything will go smoothly and we'll be able to to travel and to do all of this stuff again.
That's
right. So keeping the fingers crossed in that regard. But I just want to thank you again for being here today to talk with me.
No, I thank you very much, Stephanie. I appreciate the platform that this has provided me with. This has been going for some time and we haven't been able to get there. There's something that's come up. So I'm glad that we finally been able to do it. And I would be delighted to be invited again after my S-Way appearance to speak with you again in detail at that point. So thank you very much.
It was my pleasure, and we will definitely keep in touch about that next discussion for sure. Okay, well, that's all we have for today. Thank you to the viewers and to the listeners out there, and stay safe, everyone, and I'll see you again next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.